Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Greg DeMars, and he'll be answering your questions on urban fly fishing in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Greg a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill out the form on the right side of our homepage, and we'll let you know when the next live show will be. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. You can also find it on any of the podcast sites like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website or any of the podcast platforms at your convenience and listen to the recording at any time. If you're out and about on Facebook, Instagram, or X, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd share our podcast. And when you do, use hashtag AskAboutFlyFishing and hashtag FlyFishing. In fact, if you have a moment, do it while you're listening to the show. We'd sure appreciate it. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. When we return, we'll be talking with Greg DeMars about urban fly fishing in Dallas-Fort Worth. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly, Kodiak, and Bruin rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world. Visit Watermaster today and take a look at the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to BigSkyInflatables.com. Again, that's BigSkyInflatables.com. Before we introduce Greg, I'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away 1-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a 1-year membership to Trout Unlimited. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under tonight's section that says Register for our free drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Greg's book, Urban Fly Fishing in Dallas-Fort Worth, courtesy of Imbrifex Books. Now, here's how you can win Greg's book. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. It could be a one, it could be a two-part question, but it'll be something that Greg and I talk about during the show. You must submit your answer along with your name and your location using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely, take notes, pay attention, type fast, and maybe you'll be proud winner of Greg's most recent book, Urban Fly Fishing in Dallas-Fort Worth. Our guest tonight is Greg DeMars. Greg is a retired mechanical engineer who began his fly fishing adventures in the Colorado Rockies in the early 1990s and expanded his range from there, fishing all over the world, from the Devil's River in his native Texas to New Zealand's South Island and the foothills of the Indian Himalayas. Greg has pursued his passion for fly fishing with the analytical mind of an engineer and the creativity of a blues guitarist and songwriter, gaining valuable insight about fish behavior and fly fishing tactics along the way. An award-winning amateur photographer, Greg ties his own flies and enjoys building custom fly rods, cooking dinner for guests, and the occasional wee dram of fine Islay whiskey. Greg, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thank you, Roger. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So happy to have you. Talk about Dallas-Fort Worth. Boy, it's been a while since I've been down there. I used to go down there for business quite a bit. But in fact, it's a funny story. It might have been the last time I was there. I'm not quite sure. But I flew out of the old Denver Stapleton Airport down there to do training. And when I flew back, I flew into the new DIA airport. So flew out of one and flew back in another. I thought that was kind of a unique experience at the time.
Kind of pegs it to a certain time frame, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm getting older, Greg. I'm getting older. So let's get started. You just published Urban Fly Fishing Dallas-Fort Worth. And I'll tell you, your publisher, Imbrifex, does just an outstanding job. I mean, the color photography, the way it's all done, and of course your writing and putting it all together is incredible. But I think they just do a bang up job on their books. So kudos to your publisher and to you, of course. So tell us a bit how this book came about and, you know, what got you going on this endeavor.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I never planned to write a book. You know, I never set out to write a book. Being a mechanical engineer, we're not really known for writing. And so I spent, you know, 30 or so years in the software industry, and fly fishing was a hobby. I really was one of those guys that thought you had to go to the mountains and find cold water and fish for trout if you wanted to use a fly rod. And my mind kind of got changed. A friend of mine invited me on a trip out to the Devil's River in West Texas, and he said it would be really good fishing, and that was actually an understatement. The Devil's River is just a beautiful fishery that's loaded with fish, and it kind of changed my mind about, you know, warm water fly fishing. I realized, hey, you can fly fish for any species you want, really. And so I started doing some more fishing closer to home. I was actually driving down from Dallas to fish with my friend Aaron Reed, who wrote the first book in this series, in the Local Angler series from Imberfex, and going down there to fish with him in those beautiful limestone streams in central Texas. But from here, it's a 6 or 7 hour round trip. And so I thought, I really need to find some water closer to home so that I can, you know, do some fishing without having to drive so much. And at the time, I was living in a high rise in downtown Dallas. So all of the water anywhere near me was definitely urban water. Luckily, there's a place not too far from the condo I was living in that I could walk to, and that was actually Turtle Creek. And I walked down to Turtle Creek not expecting much, and lo and behold, the thing is full of fish. And so I started kind of expanding from there and fishing other creeks around here. And I told Aaron about it, and he said, oh, that's great. Greg, you should write the Dallas book. And I thought to myself, no, thank you, actually. But thanks for, you know, thinking about me. But Aaron can be persuasive. So eventually he worked on me enough and actually helped me put together a proposal for his publisher, Imberfex. And gosh, it was just really well received. And they wanted to publish a book. So all of a sudden, here I am writing a fishing guide book.
Funny how things come to be, huh? Yeah, well, it worked out well for you. You did a great job. And so tell us about how the book is organized and what you think is the best way to get the most out of it and use it.
Well, there's probably a couple of ways to answer that question. It's organized, you know, in terms of just fishing, it's organized in kind of five different areas of what we call the DFW Metroplex. And so it's basically kind of arbitrary geographic, you know, north of Dallas, northwest of Dallas, Fort Worth, you know, kind of just work my way around the Metroplex and divide it up into five different areas. And each area has two or three creeks in it that I feature and give access points and described wades for each of those creeks. So from a nuts and bolts standpoint for fishing, that's kind of how we're organized. But there's also a lot of other information in the book as well, everything from what kind of gear you might want to use to how to identify poison ivy to Texas river law and how to access the water that you want to fish legally. There's a lot of different information in there, but obviously the core of it is that fishing information. So if you're using it to find a place to fish, what I recommend, actually it's in the book too, I say what you want to do is find the place you want to fish first. So go to that section of the book and then find the creek that is described the way that you want to fish or that has the species that you're looking for, and then get out there and do some fishing.
Yeah, yeah, sounds good. So we have a couple questions in from our audience. Kevin in Albuquerque, New Mexico, wrote in. He says, what are the key differences when comparing urban fishing to more remote locations? Do urban fish tend to generally be more aggressive or less assertive overall? Is your mindset or approach different for fishing these different watersheds?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. The differences to me really are more in terms of what are the challenges to the fishing itself. You know, for example, if you're fishing out in the country, you're driving to your spot, it's a nice sunny day, you're not thinking about much but fishing. Well, if you're in the city and you're driving to your spot, you're thinking about the traffic. There's a lot of other kind of different type of obstacles that you have to navigate in order to do your fishing in a city. In terms of the fishing itself, you know, that's an interesting question. I don't know that I could tell you there's a difference between fishing the fish and their behavior in more remote locations versus the city. It may be that fish in the city are more accustomed to people being nearby, and so they're not maybe as spooked as easily. But gosh, that's a good question. I don't know that I've noticed any substantial differences between the fish behavior and how aggressive they are. I mean, sunfish, for me, the Lipomus genus, are aggressive no matter what. And I've heard people say, you know, if bluegill got 10 pounds, that you wouldn't want to be in the water with them.
But yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so, it's yeah, it does make you think, though, with all the noise, the traffic, the things going overhead from helicopters to, I mean, everything that a city has, right? I mean, it is normal, right? That the fish would have to be a little bit more or less thin skinned than they would be in a remote, you know, wilderness area where they don't have all this commotion going on. But it's probably something that's hard to measure. There's still, I saw that picture in your book on Turtle Creek where the, you know, a great blue heron is stalking the river there, the creek. And so that shows you that it's not that they're without predators there either, right?
Right, exactly. No, I see egrets and herons and all kinds of different birds of prey. Osprey inhabit the creeks. So, yeah, I mean, they're definitely predators. But I guess maybe if you have kids playing or you have hikers or somebody in the stream, there may just be a little bit desensitized to human presence. I'm sure they're always on the lookout for predators, though.
Yeah, right. Okay, Chuck in Placerville, California says, do you have any security concerns parking your vehicle in Dallas urban area? In California, fly fishermen have had vehicles broken into and catalytic converter thefts in urban parking lots. Any issues with that you've experienced?
You know, I haven't personally, and I've fished a whole bunch of water for this book, and I don't know what the percentage is, but I fished a lot of water that didn't make it in the book. And there were a couple of maybe slightly sketchy neighborhoods that I was in. I've never had an issue, but I did make sure to kind of filter the contents of the book and the places that I recommend that you go fish through that filter. So I really try to stay away from any sketchy neighborhoods or kind of more remote locations that there weren't people around. So, you know, I haven't personally experienced that. And I really did try to be careful with what I put in the book in terms of the safety of the places that I recommend.
Okay. AJ in New Orleans wrote in and says, are the waters in the DFW area easily accessible to the public? And I'd like to add on to that, since you mentioned earlier, you know, what are the river laws that one should be concerned about in Texas?
Yeah, and Texas is a bit of an outlier, I think, in terms of public water and access to the water. The land in Texas is somewhere north of 97% owned privately. So there's not, you know, most of the land that you're going to be in contact with or want to go through to get to your water is privately owned. So I make it a very strong point in the book that we don't want to do any trespassing at all. We want landowners to appreciate anglers, not hate them. So in the book, there's a whole chapter on Texas river law, and it talks about how to legally access the water that you want to fish. One of the things that makes it relatively convenient, I would say, is that every time there's a public road that has a bridge that crosses a creek, that road has an easement, a right-of-way on either side of it that is public land that you can use to access the creek. So if you can find a decent place to park and find a legal way to get to that bridge, you can get in the creek there and start fishing. And once you're in the creek, the waters of the state of Texas are all public access. So what that means is that you can fish any of those public waters. And the way that we determine that is through what we call the gradient boundary. And I kind of get into the technical details in the book, and I won't do that here, but this has actually been determined by the United States Supreme Court because Oklahoma sued Texas about the Red River and the border between Texas and Oklahoma. And so this has been determined by the United States Supreme Court. But in essence, we use the gradient boundary, which has nothing to do with the water in the creek. It has to do with the bank and the land surrounding the creek. And if you imagine the land surrounding the creek on both sides kind of comes down the bank to a flat part at the bottom where the water flows, the gradient boundary is basically halfway up the bank. So if you measure from bank to bank at the gradient boundary, if the stream bed, which is what this is called, the stream bed averages 30 feet or more wide from its mouth upstream, that's the waters of the state of Texas, and it's public water, so you can fish there. And let's be honest, if a stream is smaller than 30 feet wide, it's going to be probably too small most of the time for us to care about fishing it anyway, because there's not enough water in there to fish. So,
that's
kind of how we figure that out with legal access.
So the landowners do not own the ground under the water, basically, the riverbed, as they do up in Wyoming.
That's another weird situation in Texas, to be honest. Most of the time, no, you're right. Most of the time, the landowner does not own the stream bed. In some cases, they do. There was a bill that was passed in the 1930s called the Small Bill, which basically granted some landowners the deed to the land under the stream, but it was for mineral rights. It wasn't for them to own the land. And so the law specifically excluded or specifically provided for public access to that water in spite of the fact that the landowner actually owned the stream bed underneath. And yes, I mean, some people in Texas will say, well, if the landowner owns the stream bed, you can't stand on it. You have to float on it. Well, that's the myth. You can actually stand on it because those stream beds were reserved for the public use.
So basically, from what I've got from what you've said is if you can access the river legally via a bridge easement area, then you can basically wade up and down the river and fish without a problem and even stand on the bank and eat your lunch if you want, as long as you don't go too high, right?
Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty much it. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean all the landowners along that creek are going to agree with that.
Okay.
So I do address some of those concerns as well. I actually had a fishing in a creek south of Dallas, a really, really pretty area and a really wide creek. It was probably 100, 125 feet wide. So clearly what we call navigable, that's the term we use to determine the gradient boundary measurement and all that. If it's 30 feet wide, that means it's navigable. Even if there's no water in it, it's still called navigable, and that's the standard we use for public access. But anyway, I was fishing. I wasn't having much luck. I wasn't catching very many fish and, you know, trying to decide whether I wanted to include it in the book. But I heard a voice from on high calling out, "Young man, young man." And I looked up, and there's a lady up there, and she starts scolding me about how I'm trespassing and I'm, you know, I don't want to escalate things, but I'm like, "I'm sorry, ma'am, but I believe this is legal, but I tell you what, since I'm not catching very many fish, I'll leave." Well, she went into her house and called the police. So as I was going back to my truck, I waded back to my truck, I got out of the creek. As I was getting into my truck, two police SUVs pulled up next to me. And they got out and asked me, you know, "Hey, we heard, you know, somebody called us." And I said, yes, I know. And I said, "Look, I'm writing a book about urban fishing, and I actually have a chapter in the book all about Texas river law and what's legal access. And I can assure you that this creek is, you know, legal for me to be in." And it was really a good conversation with them. And they were like, "Oh, they thought that was kind of neat that I was doing. And they learned something that day. And I actually gave them one of my cards. And I said, "If you ever want to go fishing, let's go fishing, man." So they were really nice. They were really nice about it. Now, one of the things that I did tell them, and this is also in the book, and this is important for people in Texas. If you think about trespassing in Texas, that's a Class B misdemeanor, right? So you can't walk on somebody's land, you know, if you're not invited. But the converse to that, or the corollary to that in Texas law, is what's called the Sportsman's Rights Act. And this is a law that basically says that if anyone interferes, harasses, or otherwise tries to disallow someone from legally hunting or fishing, that is also a Class B misdemeanor. So what I told the police that showed up, I said, "You know, I'm not going to complain about her asking me to leave, and I'm not going to, quote-unquote, press charges, but it might be good for y'all to go, you know, talk to her and say, hey, you know, there's this thing called the Sportsman's Rights Act, and you can't harass people that are doing fishing legally. I don't know if they ever did. But, you know, it's good for everyone to know the law, anglers and landowners.
Oh, yeah. You know, and like up in Wyoming, it can be get quite contentious out there on the river. And there's a lot of land because you're not even allowed to drop anchor. You're not allowed to wade. You know, you have to float through that free. And a lot of the landowners will call the police just like that woman did. And you're pulling your boat out and they're waiting for you, you know. So
yeah, here's your citation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's. And, you know, it's kind of hard to prove one way or the other, but I guess people have taken pictures. And anyway, it's a big, can be a big mess for everybody involved. But, well, that's really good to know. And that's, of course, I think a lot of it is maybe with this woman, too, is that not everybody knows the full extent of the law. You know, I mean, she may not know what the river laws are and so forth. So, you know, you got to cut her some slack on that, too, I guess. So, but anyway. Well, good. Good to know. Good to know. That's really important, especially in the urban settings, because I'm looking at that, you know, we're going to talk about Turtle Creek next, and I see your opening shot there. There's a house going right into the creek. I mean, so obviously you can't really go on their property to fish because there is no bank, so to speak. I'm sure there's a lot of inner city places like that that you kind of have to use your best judgment, right?
Yeah.
So... Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break here, come right back. When we come back, we'll talk about downtown Dallas area and Turtle Creek to start off with, which you had mentioned earlier, and kind of discover that and what it's got to offer. So hang tight, we'll be right back. The Ugly Bug Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming has been serving fly fishers in Wyoming and around the world since 1983. Their selection of top-of-the-line gear and a huge assortment of flies is one of the best in the land. All products are available in their fly shop and online. Looking for advice? Just give them a call and their expert professional staff will help you with whatever you need. Visit the Ugly Bug Fly Shop today at uglybugflyshop.com or call them at 866-845-9284. Again, it's the uglybugflyshop.com or call them at 866-845-9284. If you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, we're talking with Greg DeMars about urban fly fishing in Dallas and Fort Worth. If you'd like to ask Greg a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that text box to send us your question. So, Greg, I always ask my guests at this point in the show, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world? So, obviously, you know, finishing up the book and getting it published was a huge accomplishment. What else you got going on?
Well, if I could backtrack just slightly, I realized that in talking about the Texas River Law stuff, it's, you don't always have to find a bridge. I mean, in Dallas, most of the places that are in the book, the parking is at a city park or some other place that's adjoining to the creek that gives you direct access to the creek. So I didn't want to scare people off and think, oh, gosh, I got to go find a bridge over a creek to go fly fish. There's a ton of really good access all over the city. So I just wanted to maybe clear that up a little bit for people.
Sure. Well, thanks for doing that. Yeah.
Sure. And in terms of, you know, kind of what's going on right now, I mean, as you suggested, we're, you know, the actual official release date of the book was yesterday. So there's a ton of activity.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a ton of activity around the book right now. Monday night, I did a presentation at the Dallas Fly Fishers Club that was very well received. And I really appreciate those guys. I'm actually a member of that club. And then last night, I did the same presentation at the Fort Worth Fly Fishers Club. So I'm working my way through all of the different organizations around here and kind of educating everybody about my book. I'm also working with local fly shops. I'm doing a big launch event with Tailwaters Fly Shop in downtown Dallas on the 15th of March on a Saturday. And then in terms of fishing, right now you can actually catch trout around here, believe it or not. Texas Parks and Wildlife Department stocks trout all over the state during the winter months while the water's cold enough to for them to survive. Obviously, the water around here gets too warm, and they're all rainbow trout, by the way, and the water around here gets too warm for them to survive past about April or so, maybe May. So it's a put-and-take fisheries. The whole idea is to get people out to fish for trout and get them excited about fly fishing, or, you know, most of the people that are fishing for the trout are actually conventional anglers, but get people excited about fishing for trout, and you can take five home every day. So that's what people do. They catch five trout and go home and cook them up. Another thing that's
Okay.
happened in terms of fishing, you know, what's going on in the fishing world around here, the white bass spawning run is about to start kicking into high gear here pretty soon, the next week or two. It's already started happening south. The water temperature goes up, that's when they start moving. And so south of here, the water temperature's already gotten there. But here in Dallas, we're probably looking at another week or so before the white bass really start moving up into creeks to spawn. They're open water fish in the lakes most of the year, but they do come to their kind of home creek to spawn, and they come up in just gigantic numbers. It's really impressive to see some of the schools of white bass that come up. I mean, literally, they'll be bumping into you coming up the creek sometimes, and you can catch 100 fish a day easily in some locations.
Oh, wow.
So it's a pretty fun event to be a part of.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the trout, because I've interviewed Steve Ramirez, and of course he's, you know, from the hill country down there by you and south of you, and he wrote about that in a couple of his books, about catching a trout and realizing, you know, even though he released it, that trout won't be there next year because of the stocking procedures and the warm water and so forth. And I thought that was interesting. I'd never heard of that before, because most of the places, especially in the Rockies and stuff, the trout will winter over if they're lucky enough to make the cut. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, there's
approach.
Only a couple. I actually cover this in the book too. There's only a couple of places in the state where trout will overwinter here, and one is below the Canyon Lake Dam on the Guadalupe River down there, where Steve's home waters are in Central Texas. And actually, the Guadalupe River Trout Unlimited chapter is the largest Trout Unlimited chapter in the world, which is kind of a weird thing that Texas has the biggest TU chapter. But that's because of the trout in the Guadalupe River there below Canyon Lake. And there's another population in far west Texas in McKittrick Canyon. And those were introduced in the early part of the 20th century, and they've survived on their own without any sort of help. And so it's just now it's a wild population in McKittrick Canyon, and they're actually protected by the state. So you can't fish for them or anything. They're just there doing their thing.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, yeah. We did get a question in here on the internet. Vic Henry wrote in. He says, how about fishing in golf course ponds and neighborhood ponds? Is the water legal for pond fishing, or do you have to get permission?
Well, it probably depends on the pond. There are a lot of parks around here with ponds, and I cover a few of those parks, the ponds of those parks, in my trout chapter. So the trout that gets stocked by Texas Parks and Wildlife all over the state, most of that stocking happens in ponds. And so I do cover a few of those ponds in my book. But there's a ton of ponds around here that are public access in parks, city parks, state parks, that sort of thing. So there's pretty good access there. And then golf courses, well, I mean, you know, if you're a member, you probably have access, but that's up to the landowner.
Right. Yeah, that would make sense. It could cause some disruption to your back casting over the fairway or something.
Now, interestingly, that golf courses have come up here. In my book, there's several creeks that I cover that actually do run through or across golf courses. I do mention the best time to fish is probably not on a weekend with all the crazy golfers out there. It's probably probably better to do it during the week.
Yeah,
or stay on this side of the bank because the golf balls are coming from, you know, from this direction.
But it could be dangerous out there. AJ in New Orleans also wrote in and said, what are the most common species to target in the DFW area? So let's just talk in general, because we're going to talk about the different fisheries. But in general, what are the most common species that you're going to find?
Well, the big four, I would say, and the top two by far are going to be largemouth bass and then the Lipomas species, the sunfish species. So green sunfish, bluegill, and long-ear sunfish are the top three. Largemouth bass and those three sunfish are what you're going to catch the most of by far. But, you know, there's plenty of carp around here. They're just harder to catch. And then there's a lot of catfish as well. So those are the kind of the four fish that are going to be the most prevalent in the waters around here. There's a bunch of others. You can, you know, in the book, there's gar, there's freshwater drum, there's all kinds of different, you know, smaller numbers of different fish, white bass, yellow bass, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Have you fished for catfish on the fly? And if so, how have you done?
Not on purpose, but
Oh,
yes.
okay.
Yeah.
Not
Well,
on purpose,
I then tend to target largemouth bass or spotted bass, which are we're in kind of the western edge of their native range. So, I usually am targeting bass or carp, and I'm always targeting sunfish because they'll eat anything. But yeah, so I'm not generally targeting catfish unless I see one in clear water that's not too deep. But I've definitely caught a fair number of catfish, and in these creeks around here, they seem to like more brightly colored flies. So I tie a crawfish pattern in red and orange, and I've caught a fair number of catfish on the red color.
Yeah, I would think a crawfish would be a good fly to use for catfish. Yeah, I was just curious. I've never caught a catfish on a fly, on purpose or not on purpose. So, yeah, just with worms, right? When I was a
Yeah,
kid,
sure. Yeah.
bullheads. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't really like catching them because they got spines and they're kind of
Right.
slimy and, they're,
Yeah.
so I
Oh
don't target
yeah.
them anyway, just for that reason alone.
Yeah, I've got some pretty fond memories with my dad, my grandfather, and upper Wisconsin, Michigan area, night fishing for bullheads and then spending
Oh,
the rest of
sure.
the night skinning them and getting them into the freezer
Getting
kind
them
of
and
thing.
gutting
Yeah.
them and yeah.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah. So anyway, well, let's talk about Turtle Creek, downtown Dallas area, right?
Yeah. I mean, like I
Yeah.
said, I walked there from my high-rise condo.
Yeah, well, tell us a little bit about Turtle Creek and what's it like? Describe the fishery.
Sure. I've caught all four of those species I just mentioned in Turtle Creek, and as I said earlier, I wasn't expecting a lot, but man, there's a lot of fish in that creek. And there's also a lot of turtles in Turtle Creek, go figure.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's a small fishery. It's partially spring-fed, so the water tends to run clear unless it's been a big rain or something. It's only about a 5-mile-long creek, but I've fished it from the absolute headwaters all the way down to where it empties into the Trinity River, and there's fish all up and down there. There's a couple of impoundments. There's a small pond that have been kind of dammed up, and there's, you can find maybe a little bit bigger bass in there or some carp in there as well. Actually, it's funny. One of the ponds that's in a park system in the towns of Highland Park, University Park, they kind of share a border. There's a pond there that I caught probably my personal best creek bass, is a 3.5-pound bass out of one of those little ponds. You can get some decent fish, even though it is a small, watershed.
Well, and you do in your book, you mentioned a few parks, right, that I guess provide access to this.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It may be that every place that I mention in the book is an access point, is the park itself. Well, there's a couple of places. I think every place in the book. So you can go drive to the park in the parking lot that's provided there, and just walk down to the creek and start fishing.
Yeah,
So
nice.
yeah,
Yeah.
there's a bunch of parks in that area. I mean, it's in the middle of the city, and there's a bunch of little small parks that kind of line the creek.
Yeah, and it looks like from the pictures you have in there, it's kind of a mixture of a little bit of natural kind of banks, but also retaining walls and so forth, I imagine, from just city structure that contains the water there as well.
Yeah.
Some old looking stone bridges as well, so.
Yeah, that's a Stonebridge picture is in the Revachon Park, which is down there right at the mouth, basically right at the where it empties into the Trinity River. And there's some really great fish there. But yeah, there's obviously in an urban environment, you're going to want to protect the real estate that's running through. And so there's some riprap walls and some concrete and stuff that's keeping the creek in its banks so that it's not eroding away underneath someone's house.
Right. Now, in general, what for the urban fishing, I don't know if you can address this in general or not, but what weight rod, and I assume you're using mainly floating lines when you're fishing.
Yeah, I do all of, well, almost, I can tell you the two rods that I use in my creek fishing, and that's for the whole book. I never used anything other than a graphite 3-weight, 7.5-foot rod with a floating line. or I built myself a four-weight fiberglass rod on an NFC iconoglass blank. So I use a four-weight fiberglass rod or a three-weight, and both of them are short. They're 7.5 feet, and or a three-weight graphite rod.
Yeah, it seems like you'd, with close quarters, you'd want a shorter rod down in there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so easy to get your rod hung up, or, you know, if there's overhanging vegetation or anything like that, you know, you want to have a shorter rod.
And what, on Turtle Creek, what kind of flies are you using there? And do you find yourself doing more surface fishing or underwater fishing or what?
Yeah, you know, I always recommend wherever you're fishing in the Metroplex, or what I do anyway, I recommend it because it's what I do, is starting with a technique or a tactic from our trout fishing brethren, doing a dry dropper. And
Okay.
Yeah, so the dropper, you don't want to tie too deep, depending on the creek, but, you know, you tie the dropper 18 to 24 inches, and the dry can be anything you want it to be. I like to use a hopper just because there are bass in there that will come up and eat it, but sometimes I'll just do a stimulator or a bugmeister or something, just a nice big fat dry with the dropper, and the dropper can, usually I'll start with a beadhead nymph. If I'm targeting sunfish with it, the beadhead works great. Sunfish also like something that a guy named Matt Bennett developed in Central Texas called the Rio Getter for the native Rio Grande cichlids in the area. And the sunfish here love that fly. So I tend to start with the dry dropper, and it's usually a hopper dropper. And I just want to start catching fish as fast as I can. So that's what I use. And, you know, the sunfish are usually willing to oblige.
Yeah, they like shiny things.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've caught them on bare hooks at times, you know. yeah, so I was kind of looking. Do you have that? Oh, yeah, Bennett's Rio Getter. I see that in your book here. Yeah, interesting. Interesting find.
Yeah, and I just tie them small so that the sunfish can get them in their mouth.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, let's take another quick break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about Lower White Rock Creek. So hang tight. We'll be right back. Discover the power of pure skagit with Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics. From delicate soft tackles to hefty steelhead flies, OPST's versatile casting system meets the demands of every angling situation. With Ed Ward's unparalleled skagit rod design and casting expertise, OPST's offers you a quicker route to mastering effective casting techniques. Whether battling wind and rain or targeting steelhead trout or smallmouth bass, trust OPST's innovative rods, lines, and tips to elevate your fishing experience. Join the ranks of skilled anglers who rely on OPST for consistency, proficiency, and a superior fly fishing adventure. Unleash your potential with OPST today. Visit piercegadget.com or call them at 206-858-8476. Again, that's piercegadget.com or call them at 206-858-8476. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Greg DeMars about urban fly fishing in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. If you'd like to ask Greg a question, just go to our homepage, fill out that form, send it in, and we'll try to get your question answered tonight on the show. A little note here from, let's see, Clark in Bloomington, Illinois. He says, be careful about consuming fish caught in golf course ponds. Golf courses apply large amounts of chemicals which run off into these ponds. Also, I once caught a catfish on a popper in a friend's pond. So, that makes sense, Clark. That makes sense.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't recommend anybody eating fish in an urban stream anyway, just because all the people that fertilize their yards and, you know, the other potential runoff from the city, it's just probably not a good idea to eat fish that are living in the creeks. Now, I eat the stock trout when they put them in the ponds because they haven't been there for that long, and the water they lived in up till then was very clear or very clean. And then also I know a lot of guys will eat the white bass that they get on the white bass run because they've been living in the lake all year, and they're just coming up into that creek to spawn, so they're pretty clean as well. But other than that, I would definitely not recommend anybody eating fish out of an urban stream.
Yeah, that's true. I know, you know, running through Denver here in Colorado, they've cleaned up the South Platte River that runs right through downtown, and great carp fishing and stuff down there. But yeah, you still don't know. I mean, it's a city, right? You know, who knows what's going in there? Yeah, good advice. So let's talk about Lower White Rock Creek. Tell us a bit about that fishery and where it is in the Dallas area.
Yeah, White Rock Lake is on the east side of Dallas. It's a small lake. I'm not sure the size of it, maybe 100 acres. It may be bigger. I've never really looked into how big that lake is. But anyway, White Rock Creek feeds into White Rock Lake, obviously, and then the creek keeps going and actually enters the Trinity River somewhere south of Dallas, probably 10 or 15 miles south of Dallas. But I focus on the creek above White Rock Lake, and so the creek above the lake up to our kind of interstate loop highway, I-635, is what I call the Lower White Rock Creek. It's a name of my own invention. There's no such thing in geography as Lower White Rock Creek.
Okay.
But I just divided it into two so that I could put the upper part of it into the North Dallas section and the lower part of it into the downtown area section.
Okay.
That's why I
call
it Lower. But yeah, it's a really pretty limestone bed stream, really healthy fishery. There's basically the big four in there as well. You can also catch white bass. And, it flows through some interesting places. And if you ever get down in there and start fishing it, you'll understand why it's called White Rock Creek. That limestone, there's just limestone boulders and rocks, and the bank has eroded, kind of almost perfectly vertically. So there's this kind of white cliff as well on some sides and different sides of the bank. So it's really a very pretty and kind of visually interesting creek. But it has tons of fish. It's really a great fishery. And bass and sunfish, again, are the kind of prime captives in there. And there's also some good pockets of carp. You never know where you're going to catch a catfish, but they're in there as well. Yes, it's really a very productive fishery all the way up to the I-635 where I cut off that Lower White Rock Creek.
Okay. Now, the one picture for that section on page 82 and 83, high-rise building and, what is it, Corner Bakery.
Cafe.
Yeah. But the riverbed and stuff reminded me of, because I was last year in Reno, and they had done quite a bit of structure work and stuff specifically for fishing and so forth in downtown Reno. It was quite beautiful, and this kind of reminded me of it.
Is that happening?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, goes right through downtown. And, we were up in a high-rise Airbnb place. I'm looking down, and I'm seeing water tracks going across the sidewalks from fly fishers that were, got out of the river and walked to another section and left a water trail and stuff. But I could see them all fishing down there. But I was wondering if in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, have they put any effort into that kind of work, or is it all pretty natural?
It's funny. It's all pretty natural. Over the past probably 40 or 50 years, Dallas started paying attention to the cleanliness, if you will, of our local streams. In fact, in the 70s, the Dallas City Council passed an ordinance that made it illegal to swim or wade in Turtle Creek because it was so dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, the city has made great strides in cleaning up that water as well as the other creeks that are in the areas. The creeks around here are actually quite clean. If you think about being in the middle of a city, these are really nice fisheries and with clean water in them. I wouldn't drink it and I wouldn't eat the fish out of it, but they're really nice looking and they really fish quite well. To answer your question, I don't think the city has done a lot to do anything to change other than to clean up those fisheries. But there's plenty of hike and bike trails and that sort of thing all around and up and down the different creeks that run around here.
So how is access for Lower White Rock Creek? Is it pretty good as Turtle Creek?
It's excellent. Yeah, I think the waves that I describe on Lower White Rock are all accessible from a city park, a different city park.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then once you get down into the creek, it's almost like you're in a different world because you're in the middle of the city. You're driving by these Corner Bakery World Headquarters and Park, and then you just kind of slip down the bank, and there you are in this great creek that's full of fish, and you kind of forget about that you're in the middle of a city.
Yeah. Now, moving on to Bachman Creek. Tell us about Bachman.
Bachman's interesting. It's the creek that feeds Bachman Lake, and Bachman Lake is the lake that, if you've ever flown into Dallas to the Dallas Love Airport, it's at literally right at the end of the runway. So as you're approaching from the north, it almost looks like you're going to land in the lake because the runway starts right on the border of the lake. So that's kind of an interesting thing. And then it, not far from there, it goes downstream to empty into the Trinity River. But upstream from the lake is the section of the creek that I cover. And it's, again, it's a great fishery. It's absolutely full of sunfish, tons and tons of sunfish. But the closer you get to the lake, the more likely you'll catch a big bass or a carp or a catfish or Gasper Goo, which is a freshwater drum. So, you know, there's a lot of opportunities in Bachman Creek to catch a wide variety of species, but you can wade upstream from there, and that's the wade that I describe in the book, and up to Midway Road. And there's just a lot of great little interesting twists and turns. There's multi-million dollar mansions along that line the creek, so it's kind of interesting to fish seeing these giant houses. But it's a really, it's again, a very productive fishery. There's some really nice deep holes that hold good fish. So, yeah, it's one of those hidden gems in this middle of the city that
provides productive fishing.
Yeah.
Bill Butts in Springfield, Missouri wrote in, he says, I visit family in East Dallas close to Lake Ray Hubbard, wondering about opportunities in that fishery and possibly others in that area, mostly interested in temperate bass, largemouth bass, and carp. Also, I understand there are some tailwater opportunities for temperate bass in the metro area.
You know, if he's in Dallas but near Lake Ray Hubbard, then the two creeks that I cover in the book that would be perfect for him would be Rowlett Creek and Spring Creek. And Rowlett Creek has a legendary white bass run, which we're about to start getting into. So I'm going to be out on that creek a lot in the next month. But okay. Spring Creek, Rowlett Creek has a bunch of carp in it as well. Really good carp fishery. And then Spring Creek may be even more heavily carp focused. There's a lot of carp in Spring Creek as well. Both of those creeks I cover in the book, and those I would definitely recommend for him. In terms, and you know, he talked about temperate bass. Well, the white bass up Rowlett Creek, he will love that. Now, he's probably also talking about stripers, and I don't know. I haven't ever targeted stripers in a tailwater in Dallas. I'm just trying to think of where they might be. It's possible that in the they're below Lake Louisville. That's the only tailwater that I've fished in DFW because it is imminently wadeable. Now, there is also the Lake Texoma, which is on the border of Texas and Oklahoma, is legendary for its striper fishing below the dam on Lake Texoma. And then also there's a lake west of Fort Worth called Possum Kingdom Lake, and the tailwater under that dam is supposed to have really good striper fishing as well that I haven't been able to get out there and do yet, but I'm planning on that one day. But in terms of in the Metroplex itself, I don't know of any place to fish for striper in a tailwater. But in terms of temperate bass, the white bass run is fantastic around here.
Yeah, Bill Butts actually is a guest on the show here too a couple of times. One, we talked about stripers, freshwater stripers, and the other on white bass. So he's very familiar with those fish, and that's why he's probably asking about them. Yeah, good, good. Well, let's move right into that. North Dallas, Collin County, because there we have Rowlett Creek and Spring Creek. More you want to tell us about those two?
Rowlett Creek is, I don't know, it's just a great creek. It's big. It's probably the largest watershed that I cover in the book. And it's just so varied as you work your way upstream. The closer that you get to the lake, the bigger the water. There's, you know, it tends to, sometimes, you know, the wading isn't that easy because it tends to get deep. But as you work your way upstream, there's just so much varied kind of geography, and it flows through some really heavily wooded areas. So it's just really a pretty place to fish, lots of good water. And I recommend, you know, in the book for some of the creeks that have USGS stream gauges on them, I kind of say, hey, you know, look at the stream gauge before you go. And if it's above this number, be careful. If it's above this number, don't go. So okay. I try to help people out with flow gauges, flow rates and stuff like that, if there is one. Now, of course, a lot of these creeks are too small for the USGS to put a stream gauge on, but some of them do. So I do cover that information in the book and say, you know, here's my recommended kind of optimum flow levels for this creek to wade in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Rowlett is fantastic. As I mentioned, Spring Creek as well, he was asking about in that area. Those are two excellent creeks. And Spring Creek feeds into Rowlett Creek in the town of Garland. But it, again, is another one of those. It's a very, very nice fishery with very good water. There's, the stream bed itself is nice and wide, so there's really good wading. So, yeah, it's those are two great creeks, really, really nice. And, of course, Upper White Rock is an extension of Lower White Rock, and so that's this part of the book is, North Dallas and Collin County, Upper White Rock Creek. It just is a beautiful extension of White Rock Creek. It's that Austin Chalk stream bed, and it actually flows through a lot of golf courses and office parks. And so the wading, your access points for Upper White Rock Creek are a little bit more intermittent. But there are definitely some places, some different city parks and dog parks and that sort of thing that you can use to access Upper White Rock. And it, again, is, all the big four are in there, and there's a lot of them, and there's some holes, some, stretches of that creek that are waist deep and are just holding tons and tons of big bass and big carp and, the other fish there as well.
Now, you haven't mentioned smallmouth. Are they not in any of these creeks?
Not to my knowledge. Hmm. The smallmouth were introduced into Texas, in some cases back in the earlier part of the 20th century. And in fact, I talked about the Devil's River earlier, and that's a great smallmouth fishery. I've got some really nice smallmouth out of that river. But up here, there's no smallmouth, but I think if I'm remembering correctly in terms of biology, that complex of fish includes the spotted bass and the Alabama bass and our native state fish of Texas, the Guadalupe bass. I think the smallmouth are in that complex because they will hybridize with our Guadalupe bass. Yeah, so there aren't any smallmouth per se, but we do definitely have spotted bass in these waters, so that's part of that larger complex of, I forget the term they use for the complex, but those are all kind of related fish.
Chip from Dallas wrote in, he says, have you ever fished for rough fish species, buffalo, gar, bowfin, etc.?
Yes. In fact, the Louisville Lake Environmental Learning Area, it's called, and we call it LELA, which is the tailwater under the Lake Louisville Dam, is a spectacular smallmouth buffalo fishery. It's just, you wade through there, and in the calmer water, you just see a couple of dozen of these big, fat smallmouth buffalo rooting around and eating, and they will readily take a fly. And boy, when they do, it is fun. They are running, and they are pulling hard. It's like a bulldozer with fins. It's really a lot of fun to catch those buffalo. Definitely have targeted gar as well. And the spotted gar around here evidently have a diet that's heavily tilted toward crawfish, so that's what I throw if I'm trying to catch, if I'm sight casting or something to a gar. I'll use one of my demon craw that I put in the book. But bowfin, no, I don't know that I've ever even seen bowfin, and I'm sure they're around here, but they're probably pretty rare if I haven't seen one.
Yeah, I think, if I remember right, when we did the show in Houston, I think they have bowfin down there.
I'm pretty sure Rob caught a bunch of those, yeah.
Yeah, but I may not be remembering that correctly either. But, yeah, and so now you said in the Louisville Lake area specifically, what about Timber Creek? You included that area, that creek within that same area.
Yeah, Timber Creek's really interesting. As you move west from Dallas and start getting into Tarrant County, which is the county that Fort Worth is in, the geology changes. So where the streams in Dallas County tend to be this Austin Chalk limestone bed, as you move farther west, you're moving through the Woodbine Sandstone Formation and the Eagle Ford Shale Formations. So the streams start changing character, and Timber Creek is in the sandstone, and so it just is it has a real different look to it. And, you know, it's a kind of these rust-colored boulders, and the way that the sandstone erodes is very different than it is in the limestone. So it's fun to get out there and kind of see the different changes that geology gives you when you're out fishing in a stream. So it's a great little fishery, too. It's not very big. It's not big water, but it's full of fish, and it's just really beautiful. Some of the pictures that I was able to take and got into the book are just stunning to me. They're just so, it's such a pretty place to fish.
Yeah, it definitely looks that way. Yeah. So how does, you know, the Louisville Lake itself, are you fishing the creeks that are going into that, or do you fish the lake itself, or, you know, what's your connection with that?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't fish in the lake. I mean, all of the water that I fish, all of the things that I describe in the book are wades.
Okay.
With the exception of some, there's some pond fishing that I talk about when we talk about trout fishing. But basically all of the fishing that I do for warm water species is wading. So I'm not in the lake, but the tailwater under the dam at Louisville Lake, which is the Trinity River, the Elm Fork of the Trinity River, it's beautiful wading. It's, you can catch 8 or 9 species in, you know, a 1 mile of river.
Wow.
And it's fantastic. It's just such a great, productive fishery. So, yeah, that's the Trinity River. That's the only place of the Trinity that I fish in the book itself. Not fishing in the lake, though. But another tributary to Louisville Lake is Stewart Creek, which I cover in the book as part of my White Bass Run chapter. And Stewart Creek is another phenomenal fishery. It has a great white bass run, and that's what I put in the book. But the same place that I, you know, the access point that I put in the book for that, if you get in there and you want to fish for bass or spotted bass, you know, largemouth or spotted bass and sunfish and carp and catfish, it's a fantastic fishery, and you can wade upstream. Actually, the spot that I have you get in the book is about a mile upstream from the lake itself, and then you can fish another mile or two upstream from there. So Stewart Creek is another excellent fishery that's included in the book in the White Bass Run chapter.
When you're fishing for carp, I see some pictures of the carp in here. What kind of tactics do you use for carp, and what kind of flies are you using?
Well, if I'm targeting carp, I'm probably cursing more than I'm catching.
I think everybody does that, yeah.
Carp, you know, they're so skittish and they're so sensitive. In doing the research for the book, I learned that carp have one of the most sensitive lateral lines of any fish that swims. And so if you step in the water, you know, 100 yards from a carp, he's going to know it. And so you just really, to me, I think the key thing about fishing for carp is probably two things. One, stealth, not disturbing the water, not crunching rocks under your feet and that sort of thing. And then the other is fly presentation has to be really finely tuned, and you have to get it into the carp's little feeding area. If they don't know you're there and they're still feeding, good on you. Good, that's a good start. But you got to get that fly, you know, in the dinner plate sized area in front of their face as they're kind of rooting around looking for food. So it makes it a challenge to catch any, but they sure are fun to catch.
Yeah, yeah. I noticed you, I think you mentioned the demon claw craw prior to this. And is that something you use for carp as well?
Yeah, that one, that's a really good carp fly. It's a good size. I tie a size 6 on a little jig hook. And so I will use that, and I will use my Texas bug, which is also in the book. And that, I'll let them both just get down to the bottom and kind of bump them along the bottom and try to get them in front of a carp. The smallmouth buffalo also eat both of those flies.
Ah.
So it's really, you know, if you're in a fishery where you have both and that's what you're targeting, you just drag one of those along the bottom and kind of bounce it along a little bit, and hopefully they'll eat it for you.
The smallmouth buffalo, is that in the carp family? I mean, it kind of looks like a carp in certain respects, but...
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, it does look similar. It's got that downward turned mouth. I have no idea. I have no idea if that's a, if they're related or how closely they're related.
Yeah. Do they feed like a carp?
Yeah, they do.
They're, mainly on the bottom?
They do. Now, I don't think they're as focused on the bottom as carp are, and this is just me kind of observing or, you know, catching them. I've caught buffalo with a clouser minnow too, so, you know, they'll eat whatever's in front of them, I think, and they'll even chase something, you know, if they feel like it.
Where would you, if you wanted to target those specifically, where would be the best fishery in the Dallas-Fort Worth area to go for the buffalo?
Well, for the buffalo, it's definitely going to be Lila, the tailwater under the Lake Louisville. There's just big schools of those things. You can, wherever you go, you're going to see them in that mile that I described underneath the dam. And it's just kind of odd sometimes. There are just so many of them, and they're all kind of together and rooting around, and they're a little bit like, I think they take a fly a little bit more readily than a carp, but still, you got to get it in front of them, you know, a dozen times before, you know, you might hook up. Another thing about buffalo that's different than carp is they are not spooky at all. You can dang near step on one before they'll move out of your way. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing. They kind of look like a carp, but they're not anywhere near as spooky as carp.
Yeah, that's refreshing. One that's not so spooky. Yeah. Phil McCartney in Kentucky wrote in on the internet here. He says, are the opportunities to fish in the Dallas area year-round?
Absolutely. In fact, it's interesting. That's a good question. I don't like putting waders on. And so generally what I do, any month of the year, I'll go wet wade. As long as it's warm enough outside, and we get warm days in December and January and February in Dallas anyway. So if it's a warm day, even if the water's cold, I don't mind because it's, you know, warm outside. So I wet wade basically 12 months out of the year.
Nice and comfortable, yeah. Craig in Fort Wayne, Indiana wrote in. He says, is it true that largemouth bass will circle the edge of a pond and that there is really no primary fishing spot? Now, it sounds like most of the largemouth you've been fishing for have been in the streams and creeks, right?
The largemouth will tend to, in the streams, that, you know, fish are fish, and they don't want to expend more energy than they have to in order to get a meal. So, you know, largemouth in streams are still hiding behind rocks or in an eddy or, you know, fallen timber, that sort of thing. As far as ponds go, you know, I don't know. You know, during the spawn, yeah, they're going to come up and be in the shallow water, but I don't know that they stay there. I mean, I will tell you that I have a small farm out in East Texas, and we have about an acre and a half pond out there, and it has bass in it. The big bass are always deep. They're always in the middle and deep. And then I'll catch, you know, a little 12 to 15 inches around the edges of the pond. But I think that, you know, as far as ponds go, I think that the larger bass tend to stay deeper in the cooler water.
Yeah. A couple more sections to hit before we finish up tonight here. Worth Tarrant County, Big Fossil Creek and Big Bear Creek. Tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah.
And where that is. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, Big Fossil Creek, actually, I think I have more wades on that creek than any other. I wanted to do my friends in Fort Worth proud, so it runs basically on the north side of Fort Worth and empties into the west fork of the Trinity River over there just west of Fort, or east of Fort Worth. Yeah, I think I have 7 different wades, and it's a creek that has a lot of different characters. There's a personality in the lower section, and then there's another section that, to me, when I was fishing it, it looked, felt like I might have been in the African savannah with this tall grass and things growing along the bank. So it's got a lot of different interesting variation in it. There's spotted bass caught in that creek, largemouth, and then, you know, carp, catfish, sunfish. I did spot in one of those sections probably had to be 4 or 5 pound catfish. Just kind of hanging around. I could never get it to eat, but I know it's in there. So hopefully somebody reads my book and goes out there and catches that thing.
Yeah.
So Fossil Creek is just a gorgeous fishery. And it's interesting. I was fishing. There's a Interstate 35 runs north from Fort Worth, and Fossil Creek runs under the interstate there north of Fort Worth. And there's a big pool right there at Interstate 35 on the west side of the highway, and a behavior that I hadn't ever seen before. And, you know, if you think about sunfish and they have those, what you might think of as like eye spots on the gill plates, you know, a green
right.
sunfish or a long ear, they have that dark spot. And, you know, I always thought, oh, that's just, you know, it's for predators to see, and they think, and it's an eye and it's a bigger fish than it really is. And, you know, that whole thing about, you know, kind of tricking predators. I saw something in that little fishing hole, that little deep spot there on the side of the highway, that there was a, I think it was a green sunfish kind of protecting its nest. And I saw it kind of move forward in a threatening way towards another fish and flare its gills, its gill plates. And those eye spots then turned into like two forward-looking eyes. And it was really kind of interesting to see. It was like, wow, that looked, it really looked like a big fish, you know, but it was just flaring its gill plates and showing the eye spots to the fish that it was trying to kind of chase away.
Yeah, yeah, that is interesting. A lot of that we don't readily see when we're fishing, right? But
exactly.
Yeah, do a little snorkeling and a little photography under there, you might see more of that. Yeah, that's interesting. And then, well, we did get Clark in Bloomington, Illinois, wrote in and says, I'm from central Illinois and I get down to the Keller three or four times a year, March, May, late October, to visit the Grands. Have taken them to Bear Creek Park and had fun with the bluegill, even got a 12-inch largemouth, but it's fairly crowded and quite a bit of pressure. Any other suggestions for other water to explore near Keller?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm looking at that map right now, and there are two different access points that I recommend on Big Bear Creek, and I don't know how old his grands are and what their, you know, situation would be for getting into a creek or climbing down a bank or something like that, but, you know, I can tell you that all the wades that I did for the book, all the water that I fished for the book over the past 4 years or so, I rarely saw anyone else fishing. Now, some places, the white bass run, you're going to share the water with people, fishing for trout and ponds. Everybody shows up for that. But by and large, all of the places that I recommend in the book to go fish, you're probably not going to see another person fishing. In the book, there are three different wades on Bear Creek. There are two near Keller. And then Big Fossil Creek is also very near to Keller as well. So any of those seven wades would probably be worth taking a look at for him. I wonder if we had a dropped call here.
Oh, nope, I'm here. The last section, Mid-Cities, Cottonwood Creek, Johnson Creek, whereabouts are those? Are those near Arlington or?
Yeah, so Mid-Cities basically are the towns that are in between Dallas and Fort Worth. So, yeah,
okay.
It's Arlington, Grand Prairie, Hearst, Euless, Bedford. So there's a bunch of smaller towns that kind of sit in between Dallas and Fort Worth. And, yeah, I cover Cottonwood Creek, and that's a really, you know, it's an interesting, it's kind of a quaint little creek. It's small water. There's a fair amount of overhanging vegetation. So even with my short, you know, 7.5 foot three weight, I'm still doing a lot of roll casts. It's an absolute sunfish factory. The water's not big enough to hold a lot of big bass, so the sunfish have a heyday in Cottonwood Creeks. And it's shallow, you know, it's not too deep. So, you know, it's great, a great creek to take a kid fishing in because there's never going to be any deep water that would be any sort of hazard to them. So, yeah, Cottonwood Creek is a great little fishery, and literally a little fishery. There's a dam. There's two branches that come together at the Cottonwood soccer fields, and there's a dam that holds back that water, and there's a lot of really good fish in there and some larger bass and carp in there as well. So it's, you know, at that point, it does turn into a little bit bigger fishery, and you can catch some pretty nice-sized bass and carp. Yeah, but Cottonwood, I love it. And it just kind of flows through neighborhoods. It's not city fishing. It's just, you know, there's just houses. One of the access points is just at the end of a road that kind of ends right at the creek. And just get out and walk in and go fishing.
Yeah, nice, nice. Last question for you. Jim Budd from Lincoln, Nebraska, wrote, and he says, what's the strangest fish and the biggest fish you've caught in the Denver-Fort Worth urban area?
Well, that's a good question. Biggest fish, probably, and I didn't weigh it, but one of the smallmouth buffalo that I caught at Leela was probably a solid 10 pounds. And on a three weight, that was, oh no, I caught that one on my four weight. So on a four weight still, that was pretty crazy. It took me 20 minutes to get that fish into the net. So that's probably the largest fish I've caught in these creeks. Strangest or weirdest or whatever, you know, to me, there aren't any weird fish. They're just, you know, they're all fish and I love them, right? But I will.
They all have mamas that love them, right?
That's right. Well, that's one of the things I say about the buffalo fish, one of the pictures in the book. When I was talking to the fly fishing clubs here this week, there's a picture of one, and I said, with a face only a mother could love. Man, those buffalo are ugly.
That's funny. In terms of
weird or strange or unusual, I would say that warmoth, which is a Lepomis, it's a sunfish species, Lepomis gulosus, I think, but warmoth are not very common around here, and I've only caught two or three in the time that I was fishing for the book. So, you know, in terms of rarity, I think the warmoth is probably the fish that I would tag as the strangest or most unusual fish because it's so rare to catch around here.
Well, I guess there's one more question came in while we were talking about sunfish. Do you encounter large sunfish in the area, and are they challenging to catch?
The
larger ones.
Yeah, and I don't really know how to target sunfish for size. You know what I'm saying? It's like, they all kind of eat the same thing. I'll throw a Clouser minnow, and I might step up the size a little bit because I'd rather catch a bass than a sunfish. So in that case, I'll get, you know, the green sunfish will start self-selecting because they have bigger mouths and they tend to grow pretty big too. If I throw a little bit larger Clouser, maybe a size 6 Clouser, and then I'll start catching the bigger green sunfish. But yeah, and honestly, sunfish, they'll eat anything anyway. If they can get it in their mouth, they'll eat it. And the green ones tend to be pretty aggressive. So they'll eat flies that are half their body length. They don't care. They just want to eat.
Yeah, that was Phil wrote that in. Phil, you might check out, remember the show Passionate About Panfish I did with Bart Lombardo. And I think we talked about that during that show. There are certain ways to target the larger sunfish. I think it's more during the spawn or something like that. Can't remember exactly, but check that show out, and I think we talked about that. So
yeah, Bart would be the guy that knows.
he knows his sunfish, that's for sure. Well, it's time to wrap things up here. When we return, we're going to give away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. And we'll also be giving away a copy of Greg's book, Urban Fly Fishing Dallas-Fort Worth, courtesy of Imberfex Books. So thank you to those folks over there for providing that prize. So hang tight, and we'll be back in just a moment. The Bonefish and Tarpon Trust works very hard to safeguard the future of our beloved flats fisheries, from protecting spawning sites threatened by unsustainable fishing pressure to securing historic funding to restore Florida's Everglades and estuaries. Thanks to their members, they've expanded their conservation to the Bahamas, Belize, and Mexico. There's still much more work to be done, and they need your help. With your support, they can ensure that the flats fishery is healthy and sustainable now and for generations to come. Visit btt.org and become a member of the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust today. Again, that's btt.org. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what do you think of the show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from the show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for the next show. You don't want to miss out on your great chance on the great prizes we have to offer. If you are one of the lucky winners, we will contact you after the show to collect your information so that we can deliver your prize to you. First, we'll give away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. And to learn more about FFI, go to flyfishersinternational.org. flyfishersinternational.org. Great organization to support. The winner for that is Stephen Sykes in Maryland. Stephen Sykes. So congratulations, Stephen. I'm sure you'll enjoy your membership to FFI. And now the one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. Learn more about Trout Unlimited. Go to tu.org and check them out and learn what they do and how they help us all catch more fish and take care of our fisheries. Our winner for that is Kevin McIntyre in Oklahoma. Kevin McIntyre in Oklahoma. So congrats to Kevin as well. I know both you gentlemen will all enjoy your memberships. And now we'll give away a copy of Greg's book, Urban Fly Fishing in Dallas-Fort Worth, courtesy of Imbrifex Books. And so to win this book, you have to be the first person to send in the correct answer. And you do that on our homepage there in the area where you could ask questions during the show. Just provide your answer there, and the first person to get it correct will win Greg's book, Urban Fly Fishing, Dallas-Fort Worth. So, Greg mentioned two flies he likes to use for carp. He fishes along the bottom. What are those two flies? What are those two flies? This might be a little hard for them. We didn't talk about it a whole lot, Greg, but we'll see. I have somebody that's paying attention. And we have to wait a little pause here because there's a little delay in the broadcast, and then, of course, they have to type. So we'll give them just a second here. Still with me there, Greg?
You bet. I was going to say, I tried to mention those flies as much as I could to keep people interested, you know.
Okay. So you gave them plenty of hints, huh? Yeah. Well, let's see here. I don't get any, not even a bite. Okay, I'll settle for one of those flies, if somebody remembers. I'm not getting any answers here. Interesting. I wonder if something's wrong with the system. I did get one. Maybe it was just slow tonight. And it looks like Bob Younger. Bob. Bob's been on many of my shows, and as he watched, he's won on many of my shows as well, but he put in the Demon Claw and the Texas Bug, which is correct, right, Greg?
He's the man.
Yeah. So great. Congratulations, Bob. You know the routine, and if you'll send in same text box, your name, address, shipping address, and your email address, and then we'll get that shipped out from the publisher to you. Thank you so much for playing tonight and for paying attention, especially Bob. That was not an easy one, and you were the only one so far that's got it right, so congrats to you. Greg, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It was a great pleasure to talk with you and learn all about the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and thanks for being with us tonight.
Absolutely. My pleasure, sir. Really enjoyed it.
Yes. Well, good to have you. Hopefully you've all found the podcast archive on our website. If you haven't, just look for the link on the top line menu in the archive. You'll find all of our past shows, over 400 and some shows. You can search by anything, including any of these streams in the Dallas-Fort Worth area after we get it updated after tonight's show. So search by Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, Sunfish. You name it. You can search, and I'm sure you'll find something that you'll enjoy listening to and learning from. So do just that. We'd love to have you get more out of Ask About Fly Fishing. Our next broadcast will be on March 19th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern. On that show, I interview Kevin Finstra, and our show will be Matching Baitfish, Patterns and Techniques for Smallmouth and Largemouth Bass, Muskie, and Other Predators. Master Guide Kevin reveals his proven techniques for targeting bass, muskie, pike, and carp using baitfish patterns the fish love. Drawing from over two decades of guiding experience on Michigan's mighty Muskegon River, Kevin shares his expert strategies for reading water and presenting flies to these hard-hitting fish. Be sure to add this upcoming show to your calendar right under Kevin's picture on our homepage. It says add to calendar. Just add that there and you'll be all set to go for our next live show. We'd like to thank Fly Fishers International, Trout Unlimited, Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics, the Ugly Bug Fly Shop, and Watermaster for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing. Bye.